Well, you know what I think. I'm a Christian. I'm not going to deny that.
I do want everyone to feel comfortable. That's why I'd like to talk to you about Jesus.
Please do not go religious.
Somebody's going to hell over there.
He better not.
Even the devil will speak the truth for his own purposes.
This is war.
Accept it.
Back to Jerusalem podcast.
Yeah, I'm back and I'm armed with righteousness.
With your host, Eugene Bach.
He just seems like he's got it all figured out.
He's a righteous dude.
Yep.
Hello and welcome to another Back to Jerusalem podcast. I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, and I'm coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of America this time. And for those of you that have been listening to our podcast, I've had a good friend by the name of David Joannis that has come on. I think we had him on just about a couple weeks ago or a week ago about his new book that he had just released called Gospel Privilege. I've been following him on social media. I would encourage you to do the same after you listen to this podcast. But he was sharing about how the people that he has been working with inside of China has experienced persecution. And I asked him, would he come on and just share a little bit about that with you, our audience? I know so many of you are great, great prayer partners of Back to Jerusalem, and you guys are constantly praying together for us, and we are so very thankful for that. But we also have other partners, people like David, that we would love for you guys to partner together with as well. Pray for him, pray for his ministry, pray for the amazing work that they are doing. David, you there, brother? Can you hear me?
Yes, I am. Yeah, it's such an honor to be back. And, you know, I always appreciate how Back to Jerusalem is always given a shameless plug and shout out for the partner ministries and the people that you are surrounded by. It's very empowering for an organization like Within Reach Global and other partners for you to give a platform, really, in many ways. And that really shows the kingdom passion of Back to Jerusalem.
Yeah, kingdom passion, and I think acute awareness of we know a lot of other ministries out there like yours that do a much better job than we do. We're totally fine with saying, hey guys, these guys do a really good job over here. Check them out. And you know, if they're able to support work like you guys are doing, because I mean, you're living on the field. I know that you guys, because there's a lot of ministries that I connect with. I'm going to be honest. There's a lot of ministries that I connect with where they have a lot of people doing the work, and then they travel in and see those people like a couple times a year. And I mean, for someone like you that is living in on the field, serving on a daily basis because you're in that environment, I think is just that one next level of being connected to the mission field. So I really appreciate ministries like you and really appreciate that you take the time to join us, even though I think it's, you know, past my bedtime in Asia right now.
Yeah, it's I'm a night owl, so I get all my stuff done after 9 p.m. In fact, my recent book was probably 75% of it was written after 10 p.m. here in Thailand time.
We are direct opposites, brother. Direct opposites.
Yeah, no, I'm a night owl, and this is where my inspiration comes. As soon as my head hits the pillow, I'm like, oh, get up again, write something on my notepad so I don't forget tomorrow morning. But yeah, you're right about that aspect of being in close proximity to the people who are, you know, the real heroes. My wife and I founded Within Reach Global many years ago, 23 years it's been since I've been out of my country of birth, America, living in China and now Thailand for 8 years. But that close proximity allows you to really rub shoulders with the people who are doing the stuff, right? I consider us the people who are able to empower other indigenously led, locally led, bentuhua de jiaohui, right?
Yes.
The locally led initiatives. And China, our team in China right now is all indigenous missionaries. Now they come from multiple different tribes, ethnic people groups who crossed into yet another ethnic people group and are seeing great breakthrough. They're the true heroes, and they're the ones who are in many ways suffering, but they also get to rejoice because of that suffering. At least I get to be close enough to see and rejoice with them.
Yeah, you said something very interesting, and I would love to get to, you know, what you guys have been seeing on the ground. But before we do that, I know that we have some new listeners that may not be familiar with something that you just said, which I think is absolutely important. And that is different ethnic groups in China. I think that there are a lot of people that are not that familiar with China outside of what they see on like CNN or Fox News or BBC. And, you know, they're usually the Chinese that are, you know, building weapons or making trade or whatever. And so I think a lot of people feel, don't all Chinese people look the same? I mean, when you talk about China, isn't there only one race of people called Chinese?
Yeah. That's our ethnocentrism speaking, right? And we don't mean to be like that. It's just we are more comfortable with people who look like us and sound like us and eat like us. And every once in a while, we'll go get some Kung Pao chicken and maybe feel a little bit more ethnic. But the reality is, I think Revelation 7:9 is a clear depiction. Every nation and tribe and people group and all different colors and hues and ethnicities, this is what God cares about. If you look at China, there's 56, we call them Shaoshuminzu, ethnic minorities or minority nationalities in China, one of them being the majority, Han. However, if you look at different books like Paul Hadaway's books, for example, Operation China. I know he also co-wrote or penned Brother Yun's Heavenly Man book. And he talks about the reality that so many of these ethnic tribes are kind of clumped together by the government because it's much easier to manage, say, 56 tribes than it is 490, right? So we'll take this tribe and this and this and this and kind of lump them all together into one. And that's happened. You have the Shui Yi, the Miao Yi, the Hua Yi, all these different branches of the Yi people. Well, they're all one group in China, one of the 56. But when you walk into a Flower Yi village, their language is completely different than the Black Yi or the White Yi or the Water Yi, you know. So they are actually distinct ethnic people groups, 490 of them. In Southwest China, in Yunnan province, for example, there are 260 of that 490. So these are the people who, by and large, have little to no access. I call it the dead zones of gospel access. And what I'm seeing is all these peoples who are waiting for a gospel witness. And the good news is only good news. The gospel is only good news if it gets there in time. And that's the passion of Within Reach Global. And like I said, these ethnic missionaries who are reaching across culture into different tribes. That's the power, I think, of this ministry and many others, that there are people who are on the ground. They're indigenous leaders. However, they've crossed boundaries. We call it M1, 2, 3, and 4. There's different lengths to which you can go to leave your own culture and to penetrate into a different one. And they have striking differences, even though they're all nationally Chinese. They all have a Chinese passport, right? But when our local leaders from the Hani people go into the Yi people or into the Dai people, it is a completely different culture. Different background and dress and history and food. So it truly is missions. And these, I find, are where most of the frontier peoples live. So I think it's a very integral part of the heart of God to uplift and to point to ethnicities, colors, hues. God loves that spectrum of, he's an all nation, all people, all language God. That's who he is.
Yeah, I absolutely love, you know, working in the kingdom. I was pointing out day before yesterday, I was speaking at a Sabbath service at a Jewish a Messianic Jewish synagogue, and I told him, I said, guys, I don't know how comfortable I feel, you know, as an ethnic German born in America speaking to Jews about what's happening in China. God brings about this unity, but he doesn't remove our originality. Like he wants us to be diverse because he created us diverse. I believe that, you know, we don't look the same when we're born, and we don't look the same when we're born again, and it's for a purpose. We don't find division in our diversity. In Christ, we find unity. And I think that that so contrasts with the world that wants to see diversity in so many different things except for ideas. They want to make everybody the same kind of robot. And so when you are talking today, when people hear you talking about the different missionaries or evangelists from one part of China working in a different part of China, I think it's important for our listeners to know exactly what you just said, that these people have their own language, their own culture, their own background, their physical features, such as the color of their skin, their nose, their eyes, all of those things are different. There's as much difference between the Chinese that live in Jilin province and those that live in Xinjiang province as there is, you know, from Sweden to Italy, from England to Poland. Just as we have so much diversity in Europe in that way, different language, different culture, different, you know, features, physical features, we have the same inside of China. So China is not this homogenized nation where everybody looks the same, talks the same, acts the same. You've probably experienced this as much as I have, going into villages where not one single person speaks Chinese. I'm the only guy speaking Chinese, and I need to have a translator to translate from their language into Chinese because they don't understand me and I don't understand them.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you spent all these years trying to master the Mandarin language. It is very much, think of it like Europe. China's a big place, yep. You know, a little bit larger on either side, east and west, than America. So you can fit a lot of European countries in between that. If you imagine it like that, you realize, wow, okay, there is some major diversity. And you, a second ago, what you talked about actually reminds me of a story. And I wrote about this recently in Gospel Privilege, this book that I just wrote. It's a story of Yellow Jesus. Did I talk to you about this before?
No, I don't think so. You got my interest now.
Okay, yeah. It's ethnically or racially charged enough to draw some interest, I think. The story of someone called Yellow Jesus. He takes up one chapter. He's actually one of our local missionaries, his pseudonym being Zhang Rong in China. And I touch upon his story about how he became Yellow Jesus. And the book is coming. I'm going to write something about it. It's really exciting, but his story is still being told, so I'll write that at a later time. But he is one of our local indigenous missionaries. He crossed from his local town into another culture, different ethnic tribe. They were Burmese background. And he had been living there. He was doing child rescue. It was a methamphetamine production area in the United Wa State Army in Myanmar. Just a crazy place filled with brothels, meth labs, and abandoned children, and children who are being sold and trafficked as sex slaves and child soldiers. Crazy place. And this is the area he moves into with his family, with his three kids. And as he's there and he rescues this little infant girl, she's 2 weeks old, they take her into his home, into their home. She becomes part of their family until her mother, the baby's name was Yu Yu, her mother was released from jail from meth-related charges and came back to them and said, I want my child back. They had no legal rights to the baby Yu Yu, so they had to give that child back to its birth or her birth mom. But her birth mom was not in the right place to take care of a child. In fact, the next day, she sold Yu Yu on the black market for $500. Within Reach Global raised the money to buy Yu Yu back off the black market once they found her 6 months later. Crazy story. All that to say, she has now been adopted into Zhang Rong's family. She is the fourth child in their missionary Christian family, sweet little girl. But the whole time, these ethnic Burmese people whose pigmentation was a little bit darker than his would have been more yellow on the scale. And they looked at him and they've been watching him the whole time. And they said, you're a yellow Jesus. And he's like, what do you mean? And they described how he was like Jesus in their midst. He incarnationally did ministry and changed and transformed culture in such a way that he became like a representation of Jesus in their midst. They still call him Yellow Jesus, Huangsa de Yesu, until this day. I think it's a powerful, uplifting idea of ethnicity and culture and incarnational ministry and crossing into places that are difficult and dangerous and different. And so that's the story of Yellow Jesus. And again, empowers this idea of God's love for ethnicity.
Yeah, I was just sharing 2 days ago when I was together with our friends, our Jewish, Messianic Jewish friends, that's the beautiful thing about Christianity. I mean, when I look at Islam, their kind of home base is Mecca. That's the holy place. If you really want to feel Allah, you go to Mecca. If you are Hindu, you know, if you really want to feel the gods, you go to India. If you are Buddhist, you go to Lhasa. But God doesn't need us to be in a geographical location to come and be with us. He can live with us, and he is where his people are. His headquarters is with his followers. And so it doesn't matter if you're having revival in France, in China, in Kenya. God is there with his people. And you don't have to leave Kenya. You don't have to leave Alabama. You don't have to fly to Jerusalem to find God. God finds you. And I love that, you know, here is this indigenous brother going to the nations, preaching the good news. And he may be the only Jesus that they see. He may be the only Bible that they read. His actions, his words, you know, might be the only gospel message that they ever receive. And so I love that idea of, you know, someone, because I think that there are sometimes there's a little bit of this racial tension. You know, is Jesus black Jesus? Does he look like Osama bin Laden? Or, you know, is he white with blonde hair, as so many 1950s Jesus pictures depicted him as? There's an ongoing joke of a black pastor and a white pastor from America that they have this argument on earth. Is Jesus black or is he white? And so they were just going back and forth. And then they die around the same time and they both go to heaven. And they look at each other and they say, now we'll know, is Jesus black or is he white? And they're standing before the throne and God looks at them and says, Ni hao.
That sounds about right. Yeah, you better start learning Mandarin now, because they're the majority, right?
Yes. Yeah, there'll be so many people speaking Chinese in heaven. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
And you guys have been working in China. You guys serve in China. You have been working among the different people groups, and you've been seeing some resistance lately.
Yeah, inevitably, when you go to these places that are already conflict areas, many of the outreach centers, we have eight outreach centers, one here in Thailand, seven others in China, and all of them are conflict areas. I don't know what it is about our team. We are drawn to border towns or conflict areas or places where, like I said, methamphetamine or prostitution or trafficking centers. And inevitably, when you go to these places, you are going to stand out, first of all, Christian or not, and then you start being bold about your faith, and there's going to be inevitable pushback. And I think that's what basically we've always seen. You know, there's the reason that people receive persecution is because they've decided to follow Jesus, and they've decided they can't keep their mouth shut. And so it's not this personal, private religious experience by any means. You know how it is in China. They are passionate about evangelism. And just recently, we have an underground training that was taking place in a particular location. They've been planning this for months. And people came. There was about 25 young people getting blasted with passion for evangelism and going to different ethnic unreached people groups. And they were singing on the second floor of a rented hostel or small hotel. Someone called the police and said, someone's making a ruckus. 200 police officers, they reported. I actually wrote dozens of police in my blog because I can't imagine 200. I did see a video, and there are dozens of police officers. She secretly shot this video sideways, you know, not trying to show your camera. But our local missionary said there were 200 police officers who came and surrounded the place. And so took
you're talking about 10 officers per student.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. And for what? This is your singing in China. I think sometimes we forget the small instances of our faith that are evangelistic or outward or expressions draw great persecution outside of America, for example, and many places around the world. These are dangerous things to do, the very simple aspects of our faith. Anyway, they were all taken to a local police station, Paichusuo, and one of our local missionaries is pregnant with her third child. She was stressed and throwing up, and so they allowed her to stay in this room guarded by six police, while her husband and all the 20 went to the police station. They were detained for about 2 days, 24 hours. All their phones taken, tablets, computers, everything was taken. Our local missionary, who's the leader of all these 20, was released day afterwards to attend to his wife, but required to return to the police. Can you imagine going to a police station, being interrogated for 48 hours, being released, and then saying, by the way, you're coming back tomorrow? I mean, you want to like get your go bag, find your passport, and never come back, right? But he willingly goes back to the police station. He's held again for another 24 hours. He has since then been released. There are five people still being detained. I don't know if they're under house arrest or in jail. I believe they will be released soon. I do not know. And this is one of the many times that this has happened. But the story is, it goes on. We could linger there for a minute, and I feel like there's something on the tip of your tongue, but I'll get to the second part of the story in just a second.
Yeah, no, is this something that you guys see on a regular basis? I mean, let me ask this. Because of COVID, we know that a lot of training has been postponed or disrupted. Has this been the first training that your team has done inside since COVID, or have you guys continued your training throughout COVID?
All but one instance have not gone against any governmental restrictions whatsoever.
Okay.
There has been one time early months of COVID where one of our local missionaries, we call him Brother John. Okay. That's his pseudonym. He's 47 years old, missing a tooth, passionate about people. He's you can't stop him from sharing the gospel. He was frustrated and he's like, I'm going and sharing the gospel. And he was detained for about 48 hours, but that was more due to COVID restrictions that he stepped up across.
Okay.
Apart from that, we regularly have done meetings that don't exceed the numbers that government allows at the particular time. However, this has not been at all the first time this has happened. In fact, it's happened just recently in another city 6 months ago or so. And so this is ongoing. Again, it is the combination of conflict zone. It's also the combination of a new reign and somewhat of a, would you call it a dictatorship in China? I mean, this Christianity with Chinese characteristics doesn't, many of our local missionaries and underground church leaders, they're not comfortable giving a speech or sermon on the president's recent, you know, statements, which many have been required to do. You're required to do it or you're in trouble, even at the state church. And so we regularly see these kinds of police break-ins. In fact, I have another from 1 year ago. I have another sideways video where she's trying to hide the camera, the same person, same couple, and where about 40 police showed up at a church of 25. So it's an ongoing thing, and it's a struggle in China. But they have made a decision to follow Jesus and not to keep their mouth shut. And inevitably, that is going to draw attention. But like Pastor Samuel Lam, who was in prison for 21 years of his life in Guangdong province, in Guangzhou, said, more persecution, more growth. That's the history of the church.
Yeah, it's something that we continue to see, even if we can't measure the growth. So like right now, we're almost on autopilot in some ways at Back to Jerusalem, because we're not able to monitor the growth of the church in the way that we were able to just 2 years ago. So in 2019, one of the ways that we were able to monitor the growth of the church is just by the number of new leaders that we were, you know, bringing in and doing training together with. And so there's this constant breakdown of new leaders, and they're taking over, you know, new areas. And then you have older leaders that are retiring, but not as fast as the new leaders are rising up. So that gave us some indication. We had so many young people. I mean, usually whenever you have revival, you just see this onslaught of new people that are young and zealous that kind of come to the forefront, and you feel like you can walk into a room and of leaders and start training and start asking them, you know, how long have you guys been believers? And the normal answer to that question is a year. Less than 2 years. You know, everybody in there is in the West would be considered to be a baby Christian, but those are the signs that I would say, these touchstones of revival that you can use as indicators that, okay, we're still in that kind of growth process. But in the last 2 years, we've seen an increase in persecution. And when I say an increase of persecution, what I really mean by that is an increase of persecutiveness, if that's a word, of legislation. Like the legislation against Christians has been increasing in the last 2 years. There has been more rules, more heavy weights put around the necks of the Christians to weigh them down and to make things more difficult, you know, more pro-communism, less Christianity type of legislation that's come down the range. And there's also been a heavy restriction of movement. And because of those two things, there's been radio silence. A lot of our top team members, we have not been able to talk to on a regular basis about the things that I like to talk about, because I talk to them face to face. But I can't travel into China and around China at the moment because of the restrictions that they have. So what I have done just a few months ago is I've brought a lot of our leaders outside of China into the Middle East, where their travel restrictions are basically non-existent. And there I've been able to sit down with them and talk to them. But that is limited in scope. So I don't know what the church is looking like as far as growth. I'm only assuming that it's continuing to grow because of what you just said, which is so important. When there's more persecution, there's usually more church growth. Even if we can't see it, I think that that's the case right now inside of China, because we are seeing more persecution. And it's harder for us to do our job. You probably know about this. This morning, I put out a prayer with all of our offices. I called all of our offices together and I said, guys, let's please pray, because getting finances into China is one of our biggest obstacles right now that we're facing. We were just able to get in $30,000 yesterday. That's usually pretty easy for us in 2019, that was, you know, just a normal day of, you know, being able to operate. Now getting 30,000 into China is a big point for rejoicing, because it's so difficult to get funding into the hands of our partners because of the increase of persecution of China and the way that that is now infiltrated into the banking sector.
Yeah, it's funny, as you talk, it almost sounds like you're talking as a 21st century Christian with all modern tech and banking industry, but you're sitting in 1949 and you're looking at the church right after all the missionaries, every agency, everyone was required to leave the country. The communists took over 1949. This begins a reign of a completely different kind of China, and you know, 10 years passes, 20 years, and they think the church is dead. I mean, literally, people, there's there's silence, crickets on the other end. And, you know, we're doing Morse code back then. I don't know what we're doing. but everyone thought the church was dead. 1978, 1980s open up, and the Western world missionaries, agencies go back into China and see what? Not a dead church, not a non-existent Christian faith in China. They see it has quintupled. It's gone up actually 10 times more than what it was. Now there's 80 to 120 million Christians in China. I tend to stick with about 100. Let's go the middle road. and it has just been the massive revival in the greatest difficulty of 1966 to 76, Cultural Revolution. I'm sure everyone has had their history lesson here back to Jerusalem. But that is, it is true. COVID has made it very difficult to navigate. But that's not the only issue. That COVID's not the only issue going on here. I think if most Christians, house church leaders especially, were to only have to deal with COVID restrictions, they would be a happy bunch. Because it is much different, stranger levels of persecution and persecutiveness, as some people call it, go. But, you know, I'm really struck by this. I'm going to read this. It's from Fox's Book of Martyrs. If you haven't read Fox's Book of Martyrs, man, it's a powerful depiction of the history of persecution. It starts on the first chapter of, actually, the preface. It says, the history of the church may almost be said to be a history of the trials and sufferings of its members, as experienced at the hands of wicked men. Not a great start, John Fox, to your book, but just soon after first chapter, he goes into this. The history of his resurrection gave a new direction to all their hearts, and after the mission of the Holy Spirit imparted new confidence to their minds. The powers with which they were endued emboldened them to proclaim his name to the confusion of the Jewish rulers and the astonishment of Gentile proselytes. And I think that is ongoing. It is merely a succession of faithful, obedient steps to the master's footsteps. And you're following hard after his direction. And if you're in a place where it is commonplace to receive persecution simply for, you know, singing or visiting your next door neighbor or having any kind of child's ministry, 18 and below, all illegal, right? These are those frustrations and struggles. I have to get to the second part of the story because all this took place. All our local missionaries.
But before you do, you just inspired something. And so I would love to do this before we get to your second part, because I think that you're going to probably, I'm assuming, I could be wrong on my assumption, you're going to the more glorious part of the trial that you have there. When you were reading that from Fox's Book of Martyrs, I was reminded of a pastor inside of China that I spent quite a bit of time with to write his biography. Over a period of 2 years, we stayed in the same hotel room. We traveled around, you know, doing research on his church and him sharing his story about how he went from being a Communist Party official to founding one of the largest churches in China. His name is Pastor Zhang Rongliang, and he had written a poem in Xihua prison in March of 1978. And this is his poem. And I just want to read this on and piggyback on what you were just saying, because he does something interesting here and he personalizes struggling and suffering and persecution. He says this, and this may not match up with a lot of people that are listening to this podcast. This may not match up to your theology. I'm not saying that you need to embrace this in order to have salvation at all. I'm just saying that this pastor has gone through a lot, and perhaps he has something to teach us through his experiences that can enrich our Christian walk. He says this, suffering challenges so many people in the world. Without suffering, how is it possible to taste the depths of the goodness of the Lord? After tasting, how can one be obsessed with worldly desires? O suffering, I used to flee from you, but today the Lord has commanded me to endure all that you have for me. O suffering, Did the apostles not welcome you? Suffering invites the seekers to go along with him. He calls out to me and says, come and shake my hand. O suffering, let me embrace you. It tastes good that I was with you in the Lord. O suffering, how many disciples have you fed? Without you, life has lost its struggle. I ask you to visit me. Let me taste only a bit of the sweetness that you give. O suffering, you make the moments with my Lord so much better. You are the oxygen of the saints. Without you, they would have stopped breathing. You are so close to me. O suffering, let us walk arm in arm together. Now, of course, this poem sounded much better in Chinese, and this was the best English translation that we could give to this Chinese poem. But when I read that for the first time, I was like, I don't know if I agree with that. But after I've read it a couple times, my disagreement with it is less and less. And I embrace the poetic way that he describes suffering as being the oxygen of the Christian life. And I hate that. I hate it with every being, yeah. Every fiber, you know, rejoice and count it all blessing when you endure suffering is the dumbest advice I've ever heard in my life. I don't think so. Give me comfort. But I cannot deny the benefit.
Give you more. Yeah, but the Lord's not going to give you more than you can handle, brother.
It's true. Yes, and I can't handle very much. So,
these are the quippy kind of statements we come up with in the West because we've got to get away from any kind of suffering. And, I don't think that that's the case. I don't think Jesus would have said, and follow me because the Lord will never give you anything more than you can handle. That doesn't sound like Jesus to me. But we come up with these quippy little statements in the West because there's a safety and there's a comfort in a cultural Christianity, and it may not feel like the robust version of the great gospel that we carry because that one comes with suffering. That's a powerful poem. I'm going to have to find that, or maybe you can send it to me. But
it's in his testimony, I Stand with Christ. So it's there. It's on page 137. But I can definitely send that to you. It's something that I find fascinating because, like you said, Jesus did promise us suffering, and this goes against my American Christianity, and it has from day one, where even if I don't admit that it's egocentric, it very much is, because me losing in battle, me suffering defeat, me not having victory over the enemy, me not being a child of the King, therefore I get everything that I pray for, is not a part of my everyday diet in American churches. And so, and I'm speaking generically, of course, there are a lot of churches that really identify with the Chinese church, pray with the Chinese church, stand beside the Chinese church, and do understand this element that you are talking about, because this really does go back to believers that are putting their lives at risk, your partners, your friends that are going, they don't need to put themselves in a situation to be arrested, to have a criminal record, to lose their job because, you know, they have spent the night or two nights or three nights or whatever it was in a police station instead of in their cubicle or at the factory or at their office. You know, they don't need their phone apps to not work with their banking system because now they are put on some blacklist because of their Christian activity. But they have chosen to put their lives at risk to go into these meetings so that they could become better Christians, better followers, better evangelists, better trumpeters of the message of Jesus. So, I mean, they have put it all on the line. And that's why I'm really happy that you're able to come on and share about this, because when our brothers suffer, when our sisters suffer, we as their brothers and sisters need to be with them in that mourning, in that suffering. We can't be there in person, but we can be there in spirit and remember them, lift them up before heaven, lift them up in our prayers, support organizations like you that stand beside them and are in the trenches together with them.
I totally agree. And I'm glad you interrupted my next part of the story because I think you're right. We don't linger long enough on that aspect of suffering because it sucks. It's not, it goes against the grain of, well, it doesn't sound American, that's for sure, all that you just said. Okay, it goes against the grain of our typical nature as humans, let alone as American Christians who, you know, experience God in a very different way because we have so many religious freedoms. Now, I understand many of those are being taken away and we might be having a different conversation in 10 years or maybe less. However, we have so many gospel opportunities. It is outrageous. And those who have little to no access to the gospel or those who work in places that are unreached like that will experience difficulty. And we as the church need to, like you said, suffer with those who suffer, rejoice with those who rejoice. It's that whole idea of those who go out weeping, carrying seed to sow, will return with rejoicing, carrying sheaves with them. Amen. We go out weeping and sorrowful, weeping for the souls of men and pouring out the seeds of the gospel, and that never comes back void. A harvest comes, and we rejoice in the end. In the end, yes, there is inevitable triumph, because Jesus inevitably will triumph. His kingdom will stand eternal as the city of man fades away and is eaten by moth and rust. The kingdom of God will remain forever. But during this time in the city of man, we are inundated with difficulty and danger and stressful situations. I think we need to linger there a little bit longer to feel the weight of it.
I would like to hear, you know, because I haven't read Gospel Privilege yet. I would like to hear what your thoughts are, what you share with your audience in your book, Gospel Privilege, because we really did receive the gospel as a privilege. Not only did Jesus suffer, crucify, and was resurrected again from my sins, but every follower since Jesus has sacrificed so that I could have the Bible. I mean, when you look at the history of the printing of the Bible, it's massacre after massacre. It's like, it's not just, we're going to arrest you for printing the Bible in a different language. We are going to kill you, bury you, dig you back up, burn your body, get rid of your ashes, and burn everything that you ever touched. Like, it's almost this evil chasing after those that God moved upon so that I could have the privilege of having the gospel message. So the Bible that I hold in my hand, the message that I carry with my life, was not given to me without sacrifice. Somebody sacrificed, somebody's sacrifice. So those, Jesus, of course, gave the ultimate sacrifice, but he sent out many disciples in his name that walked in his footsteps, and they sent out disciples, and they sent out disciples. And each generation of disciples suffered so that I could have this glorious message. So my question for you, in your book, do you address it all? Our responsibility, like so many people suffered to get me, get you this message. What is our responsibility in turn to get others this message?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, that's the whole theme of the book. And there is a major section. The chapters start with gospel worth, gospel access, and continue to the third chapter with gospel poverty. In gospel poverty, I juxtapose the history of great awakenings, revivals, where they took place, where they did not take place. And you look back on the history of revivals and people who, like the Whitfields and the sinners in the hand of an angry God, Jonathan Edwards' messages, they happened in places, and we experienced these great revivals. Very much in North America. Specifically, that's what I'm addressing. Of course, they also took place in different places all over the world. And I mentioned many of them as well, specifically Irish and Scottish revivals of the time. But this long line, I was part of Teen Mania Ministries, if you remember, Acquire the Fire Youth Conventions back before with Ron Luce. And we always had, when I was an intern in 1996, we called it the long line. You're entering into the Teen Mania family, but bigger, broader sense into the body of Christ in a long line. You enter into this place and you're part of the long line. If we look back, turn our head backwards and see this long line of great cloud of witnesses, even closer times than those of Abraham, more so recent generations in American history, people dedicated themselves against injustice or for the cause of the poor or for some particular cause, and it had a ripple effect and allowed the gospel to permeate culture. It did in our culture. And though the rise of the nuns, of those who don't, you know, choose any religion, rather they would be called none and no affiliation whatsoever with some sort of religion, are rising in America, we still have wonderful and glorious privileges. How do we respond to that? I talk a lot about that. And you know, what I think what I mentioned is that in there is in chapter three is this kindling the present flames of revival. We have a tendency to look back in time and say, oh yeah, the Jonathan Edwards, the Azusa Street Revival, you know, these great awakenings, even more recently, Jesus People Movement in the 70s. I wish we could go back to those times. Or we look towards the future and think, wouldn't it be wonderful if America could experience the revival like China is, or maybe like another country is? What we need to see is stop and see this kindling of revival, these kindles embers of revival at present. What are you doing to stoke them? How are you cupping your hands over that small flame and blowing into them like a campfire? How are you taking active steps to be bold? Those who are bold and who are going to proclaim the gospel are going to see great awakenings, revivals, life transformation. And those who don't, you know, maybe you're comfortable with where you're at and it just seems like too much work. You know, you're going to go to heaven and I'll see you there. But it's going to be a much more exciting journey and maybe more dangerous one here on earth. But is it worth it in the end? Is Jesus worth it? I think we need to ask the question, really, do we really believe the gospel? Is Jesus really worth our sufferings? And I think I can unequivocally say, yes, it is true. I've seen it personally, and I've seen it through the lives of our local missionaries.
Amen. Yeah. No, I love what you just said. I think that, do we really love Jesus? Because Jesus said, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. And the last command that he gave to all of us was to take this good news to the ends of the earth. And I think that it could be technically possible to, you know, be a Christian and not, you know, be a part of stoking those embers, as you're talking about, to not be in that long line of those that dedicate and give their life to Christ. However, because I don't think that you can earn it, right? There's nothing that you can earn with Christ. So you can't go out and do works to earn Christ's love. But if you are truly in love with Christ, I believe that there will be evidence in your life that that love affair is taking place. If I was to be charged with being in love with my wife, I think that I would hope there would be enough evidence to convict me. And I think that the Bible is chocked with these different pieces of the puzzle that an investigator could put together and say, yes, I have looked at your life and these things point to, you know, convict you of being a follower of Jesus. I would want to be convicted just because I think that those that are in love with Christ, well, I mean, if you look at the commandment to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and soul, if you look at that great commandment, and then the second is like it, to love others as you love yourself. If my family is dying, if they are in trouble, if they are hurting, my sisters, if my parents, would I not do everything to help them? Why? Because I love them. It'd just come as second nature. And so if I love God, I begin to love those that he created. And so I tend to think that, yeah, that we become participators in that handing over the gospel privilege, as you put it, so that others can experience this privilege that we have experienced ourselves. And we don't seek to be persecuted, but it happens along the way. And we embrace the God that we are just crazy in love with. So you had this group of people that are training. They're being trained, and they are you guys have this raid that takes place. Continue on, brother. Sorry for the interruption. This is the long way around, but this is why I love.
That was a long one.
I could go forever on other different areas.
I'm always intrigued by the Back to Jerusalem, or should I say Eugene Buck bunny trails, but they always have a purpose, right? Yeah. There's always a purpose. And I think that's a good one to linger on, all that we just talked about. So after that difficulty, and we were scared for their lives. We were suffering with them in many ways, going back and forth. What's crazy is right after Brother Lee, the leader who was taken by the police, was released. This is now the third day. By the fourth day, all of their phones, by the way, and tablets and computers are still missing, okay? And even if they did get them back in a week or so, who wants them anyway? By now, the government has already put bugs in them, tracing and tracking, and they're junk now. You can't use them for anything because they're so easy to trace. Malware, spyware, whatever's on them. This has happened to us before. But on the fourth day, they had been preparing for yet another kids camp that was 4 hours away from the city that they were busted in. So stealthily, in the night hours, they drove 4 hours up to this other city. They did not have any phones now. There's no way of contacting them. So it was a good thing. And they continued to do this ministry to these three-day kids camp. The kids were teenagers and had powerful experiences with God. There was about 30 young people there and just were weeping and rejoicing and salvations and learning about how to express your love to your family and parents in China. It's very rare to ever hear the words, "Wa aini," I love you. And either way, from parents to children or vice versa. And so they were teaching about all these Christian principles. On the fourth day, after this second training takes place, they invited all the parents to come join them. Neighbors came as well, and there ended up being 200 people at this day of rejoicing or celebration day after this three-day camp, and where all the kids stood up and would say something nice to their parents. And some of them said the most powerful words to their parents had never heard, and ended with a, "Wa aini, mama, wa aini, baba, I love you, mom and dad." And they were just weeping. And there's this communal transformation that took place. We've seen salvations come out of that. We've seen whole families turning to the Lord now. You think of all this. All this came on the heels of a great difficulty and persecution and jail time. I think that's what my blog on withinreachglobal.org is called, something like Jailed Chinese Missionaries Can't Keep Silent About Their Faith or Boldly Preach the Gospel. And all this came right after persecution came. And it would have stopped there if we said, okay, well, let's settle down. Let's chill out for a while. Let's not go the extra mile. But they did. They are just crazy enough to do a second training in a hostile environment. And that is what opened up a new wave of what I would call a mini revival in that little area. So we're seeing that unfold. That was literally last week that took place, 5-6 days ago. Wow. So it's fresh, it's new, it's not going to be the last time it happens. And I'm intrigued by these moments of divine intersections where God allows us to be in the right place at the right time, or what feels like the wrong place at the wrong time. But inevitably, he uses all that for his glory and causes good things to come for those who love him and who are called according to his purpose.
Amen. Yeah, that's a powerful testimony. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, that really, we don't always get to hear the good stories that follow after persecution. I think that, you know, it's very easy for us to see all of the different hot spots and to follow those hot spots. And then after the hot spots have kind of, before they've even kind of cooled down, there's another, you know, arrest, there's another raid, there's another focus for persecution. And so it's very easy to be these persecution hoppers and to go along following all the different places, and it can really put you in a bad place. I mean, yeah, persecution is something that we are promised and we will face. But I love when there are testimonies, because I think most persecution, if not all persecution, ends with a testimony, whether we get to see it or not. And so I think that it's wonderful when we get to follow up and see the glory, the faithfulness of God, because He's always faithful. We may not always highlight His faithfulness. We may not always announce His faithfulness. We may not always, you know, follow up from the persecution and try to cover these, you know, this arrest and this arrest with what happened afterwards in the family, because we may not know. I mean, the goodness of God sometimes is layered, and it happens, you know, in generations, not just in minutes or in hours or in days. So it may not always be easy to see, but it's there. That's why I love the story of Paul, because, I mean, even though Stephen was killed, in the testimony may not seem immediate at first. We see that somebody witnessed this martyrdom of an amazing saint, and his life was transformed. And I can't believe for one minute that the life of Stephen was not going through his mind when he was led to his final moments in Rome himself. And so I consider that to be, you know, within that line of testimony. So I'm very thankful that you did give the follow-up, that you did share that there were families that had breakthroughs. There is a community in China that is experiencing the fresh waters of revival, that God is moving, you know, in spite of the fact that, you know, the government is in opposition to what He is doing.
Yeah, I mean, we live in a place of cancel culture, and we're supposed to destroy and dismantle all societal religious constructs, and there's this cancel Christianity idea. What silly, crappy notion. I mean, give me a break. The gospel has survived all kinds of things, not just some Twitter culture war or a little bit more what we're experiencing now. Nothing will stop the momentum, the progression of the gospel as it goes forth. I think that's what I really want to encourage people to see and to hear in this conversation. It's all about persecution. Maybe we might have a little clickbaiter kind of a persecution narrative at the beginning, and that's how it drew them to it. But the reality is, this is not a persecution narrative. This is a revival narrative. Yes. This is a kingdom narrative. Yeah. And when you look at it in that epic, you know, the long epic, the grand epic, it makes more sense. And so the gospel is not going to be canceled by COVID. Christianity is not going to be canceled by SJWs. The Chinese church is not going to be quenched or quelched by the Chinese government, who is in opposition to it. And every other case for that same thought, you know, it will not stop. It will continue. And that's the hope we have in the gospel.
Jesus is
the gospel. Jesus is the gospel.
Amen. And I mean, what is a good movie? You know, what is Rocky without taking a few spills and losing before he finally wins? You know, what is Star Wars without the Death Star? What is, you know, it's like we got this grand saga unfolding before our eyes, and we could stop on the persecution and live there. But the truth is that it is the grand part of this amazing story. You thought he was down. You thought he was out. You thought he was dying. But then he comes back and wins victory. So yeah.
Obi-Wan Kenobi would not be happy if we quit now.
Yeah. Thanks, brother, for coming on. If people are listening to this podcast, they've just listened to this amazing story that you've shared. I know that you have more shares or more stories like that on your website. Where can they go to follow you, to find out about your book, Gospel Privilege, and to read these blogs that you put up from time to time?
Thank you. Yeah, it's withinreachglobal.org is the ministry name and website, withinreachglobal.org. And you can find the book, Gospel Privilege. I think it's going to be a timely message for people from all over the world. It's on Amazon. I'm working on the audio book. It'll be out in a couple weeks right from now, as we're recording, that is. And so, yeah, withinreachglobal.org, all the ministry updates, gospelprivilege.com will get you to my website and all the other juicy stuff. So follow along. Thanks for the opportunity and the shameless plug yet once again.
Thanks, brother. It's been so great to be with you again. This is David Joannis with us from Within Reach Global. You can find them on withinreachglobal.org, withinreachglobal.org. They have an amazing book that has just come out. I encourage you to get it. It's called Gospel Privilege. Thank you so much, brother. It's been a privilege.
Thank you.
Again.
Yes.
God bless you.
Again. Yes. Blessings.
And I want to thank you guys for joining us for another Back to Jerusalem podcast. Again, I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of America. God bless.